I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren.
And we are the Rance Macabre, covering all things horror.
With a new episode every Macabre Monday, we explore the genre with sharp focus and deep production.
We want you to love scary movies as much as we do, so we don't overshare plots or give spoilers. The Rance Macabre. Cutting,
cultured,
and curated.
As a kid, one of my most cherished possessions was my Fright Night soundtrack cassette. My dad and I would listen to it over and over again on the way to school in his old beat-up Mazda pickup. Half of my love for the movie was due to my memories of just listening to that soundtrack. It was already older by the time I started listening to it, but listening back to it now, it's really no great shakes. But to a little kid, Mindy, it was a tape that contained all of the most brilliant songs that I'd ever heard at that time. Every time we'd listen to it, my dad and I would recount the scenes of the film when the songs took place. Memory's strange like that. Music has the power to transport us right back to the place that we associate each song. Movie scoring and composing for film is a great art and talent, but you can't diminish the great music supervisor or the music producer. Inserting a song that stands alone into a film and allowing it to lend power to a scene is hard work. But I'll tell you, I can't listen to Stuck in the Middle with You without thinking of Reservoir Dogs. When a song can be inserted into a film and change the song's whole meaning, that's true power. It lifts both the film and the song to the next level. I was kicking around the old can, talking to my husband Jackson, about an episode on soundtracks, and he brought up Demon Knight. The Demon Knight soundtrack, although a CD and not a cassette, was his version of my Fright Night. Since Darren's still out traveling Europe, I got to do whatever I wanted this week, and so I'm stacking the panel with musicians. I have Jackson and also my good friend Brian this week, and we are talking horror soundtracks, namely 1985's Fright Night, and 10 years later, 1995's Demon Knight.
Hi, this is Jackson.
This is Brian.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for coming on by. Now, I wanted to know, Brian, I'll start with you. What were your first associations with these films before, when I told you, hey, we're going to do this show, you're going to be on? What did you know about Fright Night? What did you know about Demon Knight?
All right, so I'm going to start with Demon Knight because I was familiar with that.
Okay.
All right, so I saw Demon Knight, I think, when I was in eighth grade in middle school with my two asshole friends and my brother. And it was like, I didn't watch many horror movies back then. That might have been one of the first horror movies I saw in the theater. And I loved Tales from the Crypt.
Right, right.
And like, the movie was like, it was actually frightening, which most Tales from the Crypt stuff was like, it had frightening moments, but it wasn't like, it was just entertaining more than anything.
Right, right, right.
Filter's Hey Man, Nice Shot was like, that was like one of the biggest songs of like that year for me. And mm-hmm. I loved that. I loved any song that kind of like sounded like that too. So the soundtrack was really fucking cool. And I guess we'll talk about that more later.
Yeah, we will. We will go into that.
Dive deep into it right now.
Yes, that's right. That's right. What about Fright Night for you?
Fright Night. So Fright Night has been tossed around as this amazing horror movie from the 80s, and you and Jackson have been telling me to watch it forever, and you've been like, we're going to watch it together. We never have.
It's true. It's true.
Paige told me to watch it. Never watched that either. Paige is my complicated relationship.
Fair enough.
Anyway, and I've never watched it with her. I've never watched it with anyone, no matter how many times people recommended it to me. So you called me earlier in the week, it was like, we got this podcast, it's going to be about music, it's going to be about soundtracks. I was like, sign me up, I don't care what it is. And then you said Demon, I'm like, oh shit, I remember that. That was great.
Right.
So like, and so I went back and I watched that on YouTube. And I was just like, wait a minute, Fright Night, I still haven't seen that. And leading up to this moment, I think I watched it about 3 hours ago.
For the very first time in your life.
Right. And early this morning, I was like, I haven't watched Fright Night yet. So I pulled in a bunch of people at my job to watch it with me. So like, I
Excellent.
Gauged their reactions and so on and so forth.
And they loved it?
They loved it. Yeah,
of course,
yeah. They thought
it's
it was
a great.
Film. It's the quintessential like 80s movie. Like,
yeah,
and there's so many other movies that have piggybacked off of that concept.
So Jackson, what about you? I know Demon Knight was the one you suggested, which I probably wouldn't have picked, but I get it. But what about you?
Well, I think originally you brought up Fright Night, and to be completely fair, I certainly watched it at some point in time. But I just don't recall it, the actual movie, until we rewatched it for this episode. We actually watched the remake fairly recently as well.
I like that. Which you know, is quite I'm not good. A remake person, but and especially something as precious to me as Fright Night.
Yeah.
But I really loved it. Anton Yelchin's in it, who's amazing. You know, like
it was. A really great watch, and the. So I don't necessarily have the nostalgia for Fright Night, but then when you talked about like Fright Night and what the soundtrack meant to you, it really made me think of, you know, different soundtracks that would be for a very important time period of time in my life. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, you know, everyone talks about, hey, music in the 60s is the best ever, right? For me, it's 1994. That's like the year.
That was a good
and, year. And this is 1995, which is basically taking the tail end of what I like about that music and what that meant to me at that point in time in my life, just being, you know, in that, like, late middle school or early high school kind of an era. And really, Demon Knight was that soundtrack for me that I just wore out. That's, like, I had that CD. I listened to it so many times that I don't even think it'll play anymore, which is kind of a task for a CD.
True. It's like one of those that would fall on your car floor.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And, or, you know, got stuck in the 3-CD changer, you know, the rotary jump off.
Oh, I didn't have that. That's rich, fancy shit.
Oh, yeah. That was somebody's mom's basement, for sure.
Absolutely.
So, for me, Demon Knight was really, and in, what I really think is great about these two particular soundtracks is that just a great timestamp of what was going on with music in those particular period of time. And that being said, Demon Knight is certainly going to be a little bit more heavy metal oriented, you know, and we'll talk about it a little later, just some of the, like, amazing albums that did come out in 94. And, you know, this is going to be a little bit more of a thing that I personally liked.
Sure.
So we'll kind of circle back to that, but it really, that to me is the quintessential movement from the early 90s into the mid 90s metal scene.
Let's kick it off, starting with 1995's Tales from the Crypt presents Demon Knight, directed by Ernest Dickerson, who directed episodes of Treme, The Wire, lots of episodes of The Wire, especially the Hamsterdam episode.
What? That was him?
Yeah, no, I mean,
oh, it stinks
really, really good ones.
Now that I'm thinking about it, oh my God, that's great.
And he also did quite a few episodes of The Walking Dead.
Okay.
It was written by, these were run-of-the-mill studio writers. These were the guys you called when you just needed a quick blockbuster movie at the time. Mark Bishop, Ethan Reif, and Cyrus Voris. Starring a cast that is so 1994, I can't even deal with it. The Collector, played by Billy Zane.
Oh my God.
Love to see Billy Zane, right?
That was the beginning. Like, that was like, it wasn't the beginning of his career, but that was like, he was starting to become a rising star around that time. And then I guess Titanic is where it peaked. And then after that, his career swiftly just went down.
Then he became like a kind of like, he loves to joke about himself.
Yeah.
But I think he's pretty good, kind of.
What was his last big role? Zoolander? I mean, shit.
Maybe.
It was.
Yeah. I don't know.
It has to be. What else has he done that was memorable?
That's
true. I mean, Demon Knight.
Well, that was before.
That's before. Because then you could also say, you know, like Twin Peaks, obviously.
Oh,
he's great
clearly,
in Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
But then we also have William Sadler playing Breaker. William Sadler is one of those guys that you say, oh, I know
him. I know that guy.
Yeah, exactly. He's a legit actor. And Darren and I talked about him. We did an episode with Sean Thompson from Miskatonic Musings, and he's also an author. And we did some Tales from the Crypt episodes, and that's when we talked about William Sadler. He is a legitimate actor who really prides himself on his accent work, and he teaches accents.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so in this one, he's not even doing an accent, which is just damn disappointing, because that's I love to hear
it. That's because I think that was his last chance to be like a leading man in a movie.
Yeah, maybe. He's one of those guys that shows up all the time, but
yeah,
you
exactly.
just never really can say, I know him
the
from
most
this.
Memorable role that I remember of William Sadler is, did you ever see the movie Kinsey?
Yes, I did. Who was he in Kinsey?
He was that pervert who can, like, jerk off in 3 seconds.
Oh, my God. I didn't even – that's this guy, though. It's like you never know
plays
that you've seen him.
The same character in every movie.
But he's a legitimate guy. He's a really good actor.
Just jerking off everywhere.
Jerking off in 3 minutes. Whatever.
I mean, you know. If you're going to have a talent.
Yeah.
I guess. Make it productive.
I don't know.
He's good at accents.
Holy semen.
Jacking off.
Just holy semen.
Great. Excellent. Moving on from that.
That's going to be edited out.
I'll probably leave it in. Probably shouldn't just talk out your ass.
Are we still doing phrasing?
Phrasing? No, stop. Next one. Next big 1990s person, Jada Pinkett. I think before she was Jada Pinkett Smith playing.
Yeah.
Now, there's a little bit of discrepancy on what we call her because some people refer to her as Geraldine. Some people call her Geraldine. And some people call her Geraldine. And no one can make a goddamn decision what this girl's name is throughout the entire movie. And sometimes the same person pronounces it differently.
I'm going to go with Geraldine because some of that movie reminded me of like the South to a certain extent.
I think it finally settled in Geraldine.
Okay. It takes place in New Mexico?
New Mexico, yeah.
I'm going to go with Geraldine.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with whatever Billy Zane says, being as how he's some sort of demonic, I'm getting into you, into your mind.
Seducer?
Kinda. Yeah.
So he did like, seduce her.
I don't think he would be, like, giving her the wrong name.
Yeah.
Like, that would be kind of a shit plot hole, right?
Mm.
I don't know. These people who have supposedly known her for years and years and years can't decide on how you pronounce her name.
I think it was just a basic disrespect.
I don't think that's true. I think they like her.
I think
she's
they like
very
her,
popular
but,
in town, in this town of six people. Whatever. We also have, like, this guy at this point in time, Thomas Hayden Church, just could not meet a pilot that didn't get canceled in 1995.
That's true. Wasn't it like that Wings ended and he had just...
Ned and Stacy? That's what I think of. And,
oh my God.
Yeah,
I
Ned
forgot
and
about that.
And I referred to him in my notes throughout my notes that I took for this film as Ned from Ned and Stacy. Here's one. It's Ned from Ned and Stacy. These are the notes I take. We also have some other characters. Irene played by CCH Pounder, who I love to see. And she's really great in this. Uncle Willie, the creepy town drunk. And
yeah,
the crypt keeper is John Cassier, who's always the crypt keeper that we all know and love, this modern HBO crypt keeper. Just so anyone can put that into a strange reference outside of just the voice, but actually seeing who the guy is. If anyone's ever seen the musical for Reefer Madness, he's Ralph.
Really?
Yeah.
I had
that's
no
the crypt
idea.
Keeper.
For Madness.
Yeah, exactly. Reefer Madness. Great thing. And when you're not doing horror things, you can also check out Reefer Madness.
Film.
Right? So let's kick it off and talk a little bit about this movie as it unfolds.
Tales from the Crypt.
Well, I think the first thing that we need to talk about it is how any great horror movie should begin, and that's with boobs.
Yes.
Just immediately. They don't mess around, just like boobs immediately.
That's Tales from the Crypt. It's so
in general,
schlock,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I love the prologue and then the epilogue.
Yeah.
With the bookends there with the crypt keeper.
Yeah. That threw me off when I was going to see the movie as a kid. I was just kind of like, what's going on here? This is not what I signed up for.
Yeah, right.
It's like, oh, because it's funny.
Because it's funny.
Because it's Tales from the Crypt. How did I not see this coming? Maybe it's because I watched Scrambled Tales from the Crypt on cable and didn't actually have an HBO subscription.
So maybe you missed the beginning.
So maybe I just missed, you know, the core value or the core lead-in from Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, you were just like, that man likes to execute people. The end.
So, and he loves puns.
He does love puns.
That is,
oh yes, his puns are magical.
Pun after pun after pun. It's just basically like they just have a pun factory.
And if only I had taken notes about the puns.
If only I could make a pun with the word pun, but I can't.
We can't, no, because that would just be too on the nose.
I just can't figure it out.
That would
honestly be
a lot of pun.
I don't think
that's not a pun.
Oh, no, that's
or
not
is
a
it?
Pun.
I don't know.
I've confused myself.
Moving on.
It's just a dad joke.
Yeah, well, that's not a pun. Dad jokes are dad jokes. It's separate.
Yeah.
Moving on, the opening song that we're greeted with, because that's what we're talking about, soundtracks.
Yes.
Hey Man, Nice Shot, Filter.
Huge for me. Nostalgia, just wow. Like, that moment is... That's something that I think of when I think of, like, movie music and defining moments of like that song, that moment, all that.
Right. We see Billy Zane in a car, high speed chase, William Sadler in another car,
yeah,
driving like a maniac. William Sadler's hand starts to kind of glow, so maybe he's getting called to Carousel.
Yeah.
No one really knows what's going on there.
Now that song like defines like male testosterone for so fucking long.
You know what's funny? I always thought, because it was like the rumor at the time, that was about Kurt Cobain.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but
That's right.
It wasn't, yeah, though. Yeah, it wasn't at all. No, but no, I grew up thinking it was.
It is, in fact, not. That is from the public suicide of Bud Dyer. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right.
But ooh, wow.
D-W-Y-E-R, who actually went on to a cable television show and shot himself in the face with a shotgun while they were filming live.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Now that's why we can't have live things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was actually a thing.
Wow.
A lot of people thought it was the Kurt Cobain thing, and the band denies this.
Wrong shotgun. What?
What?
Too soon?
Is it too soon? Is it too soon for a Cobain joke?
No. I think it's just the right amount of time.
Wow.
So something to notice
joke
about...
joke is delayed.
Something... I'm moving on. It's my show. Something to notice about most of the music that's from the soundtrack, the actual soundtrack that you could buy, and then the film, not all the songs are in the film that are on the soundtrack. And the ones that we do hear... beyond the scoring are actually diegetic. So we're assuming that Billy Zane or William Sadler has this song playing in the car.
I mean, I listen to it in my car. That makes sense.
Then you drive and crash into another guy.
Well, I didn't have a sweet Trans Am.
Well, who really does?
I think the song I listened to when I crashed into somebody was Slipknot. So
that's a good one.
Not the same thing, but metal nonetheless.
I was listening to Orgy when I crashed my car.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So around the same time,
it's true,
we crashed our cars.
So we find out Billy Zane is chasing William Sadler. Well, I should just call them their names now. The Collector, Billy Zane, is chasing Breaker, William Sadler. And we don't know why. We don't know who's good and who's bad. Breaker gets out of the wreck and goes away. Billy Zane also is missing. The end.
But there is the very first moment of, wait, this doesn't make any sense, happens, because the car runs out of gasoline, and that's why it stops.
Oh,
and
yes.
That's why he has to basically pull an e-brake, slide into the middle of the road for a standoff. But then when the cars collide...
That car's made out of fuel.
It's made out of fuel. It just, the entire, including trunk and, all of it... just explodes in this huge, napalm-esque thing, which doesn't make any sense because it ran out of fuel, so why would it explode?
Maybe that was some of Michael Bay's early work.
Yeah,
he was an early pyrotechnician. I have no idea. I'm just talking out of my ass right now.
I'm pretty sure it was Michael Bay.
So we find ourselves in Wormwood, New Mexico, with some bumbling cops, because what horror movie doesn't have bumbling cops, right? CeCe Pounder runs this church that's now a hostel kind of thing that people live in. It's like a hotel, but not really. I can't quite figure that out.
Yeah, I can't either.
I'm a little confused about that. And that's when we meet the whole rest of our cast for the entire rest of the movie. So the next song we are greeted with is Cemetery Gates. And we are not only greeted with Cemetery Gates because it's playing on the radio while the local... prostitute sort of person is hanging out with Ned from Ned and Stacy and putting nipple clamps on him.
Oh, they're connected to a car battery, and there's actually a rotary thing, which leads to one of the better lines from the movie is the my nipples are smoking.
Yeah, I even wrote that one down.
The best line from the movie, hands down, in my opinion.
Well, that and the local prostitute is sitting on the table trying to entice Breaker into a transaction, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And Irene says,
"God damn it, get that pussy off the table. I met the cat."
Is that a pun? No.
I think that's just bad writing.
That's just bad writing. So the next thing we know, we still don't know, is Breaker bad? Is Billy Zane good? What's going on? Billy Zane shows up saying Breaker has stolen something from him. And then Billy Zane's going to get arrested because nothing makes sense in this town or this particular part of the plot.
No.
And Billy Zane punches through one of the local cops' face. Now, this special effect is fucking awesome.
Pretty sweet.
I mean, the special effects in this are done by Todd Masters. And we know Todd Masters from the HBO Tales of the Crypt and many things his company does. I also know him from a TV show that I'm always talking about on this show called Kindred the Embraced. Yeah, it's good.
What is that?
It's a TV show that I like that ran in the 90s, and I love it, and I don't know why it got canceled.
Oh, That's always a shame.
It's like I'm still bitter about it.
You are still bitter about it. It's not like that at all.
And then Billy Zane greets us with this speech, which is one of your favorite things.
Humans! You're not worth the flesh you're printed on! Fuck this cowboy shit!
You fucking ho-dunk, po-dunk, well then there, motherfuckers!
All you have to do is give me the goddamn key! Then we could get on with our lives! Alright, this property is hereby condemned.
Which I just think is just probably the best, one of the best monologues of any movie ever.
If you went into an audition, that would be your monologue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Billy Zane was on fire for this film, though. Like, his gestures and, like, you know, like, him playing, I guess, what is essentially, like, Satan in some kind of way. Like, he nailed it. It was, like, one of the last few things he ever nailed in his acting career.
You're so mean to Billy Zane.
Billy Zane and I have beef.
Billy Zane is gonna come
I didn't know you had a thing about Billy Zane.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I mean, we can also, at the end of that speech, we get to go back to the reoccurring 90s theme that just, they just loved green goo.
Yes.
Green goo.
They love green goo in Fright Night, too, though.
That's true. That's true. But there's more glitter.
Everyone loves
in 90s green goo.
Well, I mean, glitter really made everything better in the 90s.
When was Ghostbusters made?
Ghostbusters made back in the 80s, and we'll totally talk about it when we talk about Fright Night. It's actually pretty important.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I will
but
hold off on the Slimer references.
Yeah, but think about this for a second. Originally, this was pitched in 1987 to Tom Holland, who directed Fright Night.
Mm. Wow.
So, coming off of Fright Night, which was a huge, actually very huge success, he was offered this script and he was going to do it. He had some people make some sketches of some of the demons, stuff like that. He originally had wanted Chris Sarandon to be Billy Zane and Tommy Lee Jones to be Breaker.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah.
That would have been good.
It's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
It would have been totally different because Billy Zane gets that weird, quirky funniness.
That's true.
Chris Sarandon isn't. He's a smooth motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think it would have been interesting to kind of think of. But Tom Holland kind of, instead, he did this other movie that was a huge failure in 1987. And then the movie sat, and then it got offered to a few other people. And finally, in 95 is when it was able to get somebody because Universal just picked it up. I really try it. So like I said before, Todd Masters is involved in the special effects and everything. The demons, when they finally show up, Billy Zane has these like demons that are made out of his green goo blood, and they show up. They're pretty cool looking. The design for these demons is badass. It's like if the Crypt Keeper and Pumpkinhead like had babies, they would be these demons.
That's why I went and saw the movie.
Because the Crypt Keeper
had glowing eyes and the demons, like they were freaking creepy.
They're so oozy.
Yeah, and very oozy. Very,
I like that.
Oozy's the gun, but oozy with the green slime.
With the ooze.
With the ooze. With the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles green ooze.
They knew what the secret of the ooze was. Yeah, absolutely.
Secret ooze, yes, exactly.
One thing that did bother me is that when they're being kind of generated from that like reverse melting Billy Zane blood.
Yeah.
They did not have any piercings. And then all of a sudden they have all this like hardware made out of steel. Like they have nipple piercings and ear piercings.
Oh, because it was 1995.
Well,
yeah. And it was to the extreme, Jackson.
Well, I mean, I get like Mountain Dew extreme.
I
all
bet
that.
It was. Yeah, I bet they were extreme.
But like,
but with
you know,
an X, not EX.
That's
extreme.
Right.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised one of them didn't have skateboards for feet.
Didn't they?
I don't know. Well, I didn't look down.
We
enough.
Did actually
no,
notice
the feet
though,
are
that
freaking
the feet are
awesome.
Pretty cool because yeah, they
cool.
have they have the reverse, the Lady Gaga style reverse boot, so it looks like they have an inverted leg,
hoof.
Like a
shit. That's
yeah,
awesome.
It's like hooves, but then they go backwards, and it's exactly like those Lady Gaga boots.
Yeah,
that was freaking awesome. But then you see them, the poor people who had to do, you know, the work for those guys are like trying to climb up the steps with those shoes on. It had to be insane.
Yikes.
Yep.
I hope they had a safety net or something, because that was precarious.
I think it would have been hilarious to see him, like, falling down the stairs, though.
I bet you there's a sweet blooper reel for this somewhere.
I bet there was.
Oh, yeah, we got to find that. That was one of the first things I had seen in a while, in the movies where it's like that basement scene.
Yeah.
Where they're trying to escape.
Oh, yeah.
And like out of nowhere, just like popping out, like popping up and grabbing them. Like it's like human and demon looking like green eyed freaky monsters. Like special effects for that are freaking insane.
They're really awesome. We get Cordelia, who is the prostitute. She's one of the first ones to get all gross of the people that we know getting like enamored with Billy Zane. And then he's allowed to like kind of gets in their mind or something. I'm kind of confused on how that works. I don't know.
He's got his telekawatsits powers.
Yeah.
The telekawatsits.
So yeah. She gets all weird, but there's a great arm break of CCH Pounder and ending with the arm ripoff. And let me tell you, that character, Irene, she really makes it really far without an arm. I think you would pass out.
She bounces back with like a giant open wound.
Yeah, but she's drinking alcohol, which thins your blood, right?
No, not in that movie.
I'm like, she would just be bleeding out like a crazy
person.
Oh
my god, yeah.
Yeah.
But
oh,
instead
yeah.
she's like firing a and shotgun like, and shit.
I'm good. The vodka's kicking in.
Exactly.
It's like, shouldn't you be bleeding out worried. More now?
I'm pretty sure you're dead. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I was really worried about that. Then we discover all along the journey that Breaker is so old, he was in World War I.
Mm-hmm.
Which even in 1995 was very old.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he gets the key from a guy who had it before and had it before and had it before. And we find out the original blood inside the key was from Jesus Christ. Well, all along this way, Billy Zane is stuck outside. He's giving some great monologues. Always great when we see Billy Zane just talking all by himself.
And theatrics.
So much theatrics.
Let's not forget the theatrics.
Listen, Billy Zane is an all-around kind of an actor. He's physical
and
coming out of his mouth, which I don't know what you would call that. So
a talkie?
A talkie?
Yeah. As opposed to those talkies.
Well, he finally then goes to try and get Geraldine or Geraldine. Who knows what they're calling her at this point in the movie. And that's when we hear Gravediggers. She was that close to drinking the punch and realize false prophets lead to
suicide. Suicide into suicide. Oh my god. Gravediggers.
Finally.
Like, I get why Gravediggers was in this movie. Like, they should have been in this movie. But, like, that was it for them. Like,
Gravediggers. I can't tell you anything else.
About Gravediggers?
Yeah.
I think Russell Simmons' son is in Gravediggers. And I think RZA helped produce their record. But don't quote me on that. That might need some fact checking. But
alternate facts.
These might be alternate
RZA's
facts.
RZA's involved and Prince Paul is involved as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a trio.
It's like I don't know who these people are.
But it was a massive failure.
I know who RZA is. I don't know Prince Paul.
The world was not ready for goth. They just started listening to gangster rap. They were not ready for goth hip hop at that moment in time. Not at all.
Is anyone but ever
Demon
really
Knight
ready?
Was?
I mean, but let's say, okay, they weren't ready at that time.
Uh-huh.
Is anyone ever ready for goth hip hop?
Apparently not, because there were some bands recently that tried to do it again and it totally failed.
Who? What is this?
The Insane Clown Posse?
It was not the Insane Clown Posse. Or maybe it was one of their offshoots.
I'm pretty sure it was one of their offshoots. They definitely went to the Dark Carnival.
Twisted.
Oh. I don't even have anything to say to that.
I wanted to make like a magnet joke because that's like all I could think of, but then I couldn't make that happen.
I feel bad because now we're comparing Gravediggers to Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah,
they don't deserve that.
They definitely do not deserve that.
They do not deserve that. No one deserves that ever.
Yeah.
It's true.
Unless you're twisted. Because then that's a compliment.
It's true. Like, and you still don't know how magnets work.
There's my magnet joke. God damn it.
I got him.
So I don't want to give all the rest of things away, but I did want to note that suddenly Geraldine, I don't give a fuck.
Geraldine.
She is suddenly in her underwear.
Yeah.
And she's suddenly covered in blood all over her. Don't really know how all this happened.
She rolled around in it.
Like, I literally, like, I blinked to write a note, and then she was just in her underwear.
Didn't she dump the blood from the flask all over herself?
Right, because she didn't want Billy Zane to be able to touch her.
Yeah.
But, like, it's like she took a bath in wine, because her underwear is, like, now dyed red. The
right,
shirt,
right.
I would also like
everything.
To point out that, like, with a quick spritz in a bathtub, he was able to get all of that blood out of her white underwear.
Yeah.
Which,
and then it wasn't like
Tide
see-through.
Can do that. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I was very disappointed that it was not
she
see-through.
She was fit as fuck in that movie.
She looked fucking good.
Yeah.
I mean, she was fine as fuck in the 90s. Like,
She still looks exactly like that.
Yep.
Whatever. Maybe she really did become that key holder.
I don't know. Hmm. You know what's weird? This heavy metal soundtrack for Demon Knight, right, got Jada Pinkett in the movie, and now Jada Pinkett, like, 20 years later, has her own metal band.
I did not know that.
And yeah, they played Afropunk and everything.
Really?
Twice.
What
does
she do? Sing or play?
She sings. Yep.
Is she good?
It's actually not that bad. It's not that bad. And her husband's really like, what's her husband's name again?
Will Smith? Oh,
yes, that's this. Yes, that's the one. But yeah, very supportive. I think he actually showed up to Afropunk.
That's kind of cool. Huh?
Yeah, with her kids and everything. I mean, and yeah, she was touring at one point. Like,
that's crazy.
In a freaking metal band. Too late to be on the soundtrack, though. Maybe Demon Knight 2. Because I don't know what she's doing right now.
I believe that was Bordello of Blood.
Yeah, we call that Bordello of Blood.
Yes.
Which, you know, when I was telling my dad, I called my dad and was like, oh, yeah, I'm doing this show. And we're going to talk about Demon Knight. He's like, you know, you shouldn't talk about that. You should talk about Bordello of Blood. I was like, no, thanks, Dad.
Yeah, Bordello of Blood was like this, but without the soundtrack and the nostalgia.
Yeah.
What was Bordello? I don't know if we should go into Bordello of Blood. Can we go into Bordello of Blood? What was Bordello of Blood?
Dennis Miller and then that Angie
Everhart.
Yeah,
I saw that. I saw that in theater, too. Because I was like, okay, Demon Knight was good. This is going to be good, too. No.
Yeah.
No.
You know what, though? Sometimes it's on TV and I watch it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, you can't help yourself.
That's true. So talk to me about the music. Talk to me about the music, Jackson.
So I think one of the first and most interesting parts to me about this is the exclusion. It's the only edit from, like, albums that really occurs in the Cemetery Gates. Because obviously Pantera being one of my favorite bands at that point in time. They're
before we knew what we knew now.
Well, let's gloss over that one. But
as we do.
Let's pretend we're in 1995.
Okay.
Let's just go back in our time machine.
Yeah, exactly.
We are pre-Great Southern Trendkill, post the post-Vulgar Display of Power.
There you go.
So, the Cemetery Gates, which would be featured off of the Cowboys from Hell album, which is their, we'll do the quote, the air quotes, debut album. It's totally not. There was three albums before that.
We don't need to be Pantera nerds.
Okay, well.
we don't want to talk about the horrible 1980s Pantera.
Oh, gross.
We just pretend like that didn't. So we're in 95 with no back thought or forethought. Just okay. Living there.
But they, so there's this part in the end of the song, or I guess the bridge, we'll go with bridge. I don't know if Pantera knows what a bridge is, but.
Whatever, we'll use the word. We're musicians here. We're
It is a bridge. And there is a kind of a dueling banjos situation with Phil, the vocalist, and Dimebag Darrell, the guitar player, matching pitch to the he's basically hitting a pick squeal, and then they're matching pitch, and they cut that out. And that's actually kind of more telling than you'd think it would be, because, like, the ability to sing high and or play solos really becomes less important in the mid-90s, whereas in the early 90s and late 80s, those were kind of important things that people look forward to in music.
Yeah, that's true.
Blistering falsetto, absolutely.
Yeah, so Phil flexes those falsetto chops in that particular song. It's pretty good.
That's probably why it was taken out. Listen, this song is already almost 6 minutes long without
it's a long
that shenanigans
song.
In
it's
it.
It's got tons of ups and downs, and like the beginning is like, you know, it fools you into being, oh, this is the soft side of Pantera.
So then, kind of moving on from the Pantera bit, this is basically, for me, the, like, the Columbia House, whatever, where you can mail in and get 11 CDs for a penny
free.
A piece.
Man, I gamed that system so much.
Everyone did. That's like the joy of Columbia House.
Absolutely.
Pantera, Ministry, Machine Head, yeah. Megadeth, Melvins. I actually wasn't as into the Melvins at this point in time.
That was a good song, though.
Yeah, great. Melvins is all over the place.
They are, yeah.
But Rollins Band, Biohazard, Sepultura, and then obviously the Filter and Grave Diggers.
Yeah.
But the, you know, these are like, this is, you know, 1994 Sepultura is like, that's pretty much like what the shirts I was wearing to school.
I mean, this soundtrack was essentially was comprised of the best metal sounds that came from the early to the mid 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Headbangers Ball, like, you know, dream team more or less. And it makes the soundtrack perfect because of it, even if it wasn't all in the movie.
Right. But it's like a great compilation. It was well curated.
Absolutely. It's very well curated.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you haven't heard it yet, I mean, go on Spotify. I don't even know if it's on Spotify. I listen to it on YouTube.
It's definitely on Apple Music.
It's on Apple Music. It is. Yeah, it's definitely worth buying. Like, there was a lot of great soundtracks in the 90s that were worth buying just because of, like, you know, they curated. My personal, and, like, not to go off on a tangent, but my personal version of that, like, for you, it was Demon Knight, was Escape from L.A.
Oh, yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah, that was great, Sugar Ray was on it, but, like, punk rock Sugar Ray, like, Rob Zombie.
Before Sugar Ray was
Butthole
Sugar Ray.
The Surfers. Yeah. Like, it was so freaking good.
This soundtrack actually broke the Billboard Top 200 in
95. Wow.
For a soundtrack that, and metal soundtrack, that's pretty freaking great,
this
right?
This could have been the first one to do that in a long time, for all I know. Yeah. Especially for, like, 90s metal.
Beyond the soundtrack, there was a score for the film. The music was composed by Ed Schirmer, who also did Cruel Intentions, but, because I got to put that in there whenever I see Cruel Intentions, I'm like, ooh, Cruel Intentions. but he also did the Masters of Horror theme. He was a conductor, composer, a little bit of everything. Executive music producer, who probably was actually more active in the soundtrack buying part, was Michael Kamen, who also composed Tales from the Crypt episodes. He composed for Die Hard and Lethal Weapon as well.
Finally.
And that main theme, that Tales from the Crypt theme that we all know and love, is Danny Elfman.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So I went on to Amazon, where I found a review for this film, where I find just the best reviews. I really shouldn't even read real reviews anymore. I should just go to Amazon when I want to know if something's good or not.
I want to know what real people think. You know?
Well, this particular Amazon person said the following. I wasn't prepared for all of the profane language in the movie. The graphics were not for the faint of heart. I got the general message of the film, but the delivery was way off to me. I ordered the movie because I heard so much about the theme of how the devil uses what be in us to capture our very souls.
Mm. Yes. I'm sorry, what be in us?
Be in us.
Be in us.
Okay, yes, that makes sense.
To capture our souls.
To capture our souls.
That almost sounds like one of those they hate us because they ain't us kind of things.
They do hate us because they ain't us. Yeah, this one, though, even though it was a bad review, she still gave it 2 stars.
Mm, that's not so bad.
I would, if I was going by my, like, general, the way that I make my notes for films, and maybe this was the first time I watched it, I would give it a smiley face, but I wouldn't give it a smiley face with, like, little cheeks that are extra happy.
Mm.
So there's a lot of one-liners, or just even crazy monologues, that are great in this show. Billy Zane mostly carrying them. Jackson, I know you wrote down, like, a gazillion of them that are your favorite, which, like, if you had your way, you would just have the whole script, and then you would just probably read the whole script to us and say, this is the best.
It's true. Because these are all things that, like, as, you know, teenage version of me would have definitely said to my friends to just kind of mess with them. But, you know, for instance, the when he is making the deal with Billy Zane to kind of hand over the key, and he gives him permission to kill the rest of those assholes, and he says, well, if it feels good, do it.
That seems like something a teenager would latch onto pretty easily.
Yeah, it does. Especially, like, yeah, a teenager in 1995.
Absolutely.
That is, like, the thing to do.
If it feels good, I should do.
And the ever-popular heads up when he throws the decapitated, smashed-in head.
That's a pun.
That's a pun.
That's a good pun.
That's actually a quality pun.
Puns of fun.
So I don't want to spoil the rest of the movie, but I will have to say, stay through the credits because you'll get the awesome Machine Head and Megadeth songs at the end.
It's true.
Closing out with 1985's Fright Night, one of my most favorite childhood films, had this on a bootleg VHS that someone had recorded off of HBO, played it until it got warpy in the middle. It's one of those, which, like, I guess youngins won't ever know.
No, had to adjust the tracking.
Yeah, that's wow. Right. Got the cleaner.
Wait, you guys had a self-tracking VHS? No way. Wait, no, that was like...
No, you flip the... Yeah, you flip the thing down. There was like a little cover thing, and you flip it down, and then there was little things you could
That's track. Like clicking on advanced search in Google, and then it just like flips down the plastic cover, which usually fell off eventually.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Always. No matter what company it was. It could be Sony. It could be...
Why was it covered in the first place?
I don't know.
VHS.
Man, trying to stop grandmas from, you know, messing up the timer setting on the VCR.
Actually, that makes sense to keep it, because like if it's buttons you don't need to push, cover it up from grandma, because she'll push them.
She will, too.
Anyway, written and directed both by Tom Holland. This was his first big film. He also did Child's Play and Thinner. Now, this was kind of an all-star cast in 1985, all-star of like B-list. We had Chris Sarandon, who was hot shit in 1985, playing the vampire Jerry Dandridge. We have William Ragsdale from Herman's Head.
I was about to say.
Yeah, that's what I always think of.
Herman's Head.
Herman's Head. And he was Charlie Brewster, who is our main character. Amanda Bierce from Married with Children, right, is playing Amy, which is Charlie's girlfriend. She's 31 years old at this time, playing a high school student.
Wait, she was 31 years old?
31 years old.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. She still looks amazing.
Wow.
She never ages, ever,
ever. That's crazy. She was Marcy Darcy.
She was Marcy Darcy.
It was in the 90s. My Sundays were The Simpsons, Married with Children, and then Herman's Head.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. There was Parker Lewis Can't Lose for about
Fox. Oh, and was Parker freaking Lewis amazing. Can't Lose. Yes.
Oh, my God. I love Parker Lewis.
That was such a great show. I don't want to go back and watch it because I don't want to know if it was good or bad.
That's how I am with Kindred the Embraced. But yeah. It's not good, actually. I started watching it again.
Or Hercules. But I think we all know that Hercules was bad.
Was it?
I don't know. I mean, yes. Yes, it was.
Okay. Aww.
We also have huge star, but not so much in 1985, but Roddy McDowall from Planet of the Apes. He has also won an Emmy and a Golden Globe, and he is playing Peter Vincent, who is like a hack ham actor.
Stop, you creature of the night.
Who are you who interrupts my nightly feeding?
I am Peter Vincent, vampire killer.
Combining Peter Cushing and Vincent Price into one character, Peter Vincent.
Yeah, such a great idea.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's great. Everyone, what's kind of cool, which I think is severely lacking in the horror community right now, are these shows that used to exist. Probably Elvira was probably the most famous of those kind of hosts that would curate films.
Right.
Yeah. But like, people talk about in the 70s and clear up into the 80s, each like local town would have a guy who had these Friday night shows and would do these movies.
Why don't we have that anymore?
I know.
We need that guy.
We can do that.
I know. I would love to do that, right? And they just hosted the show and people would watch it. And it was like schlock. Very similar to Peter
Vincent.
Kind of
like Robin Bird, but more horror.
Do we have that guy on YouTube?
Yeah.
Can you grow a pencil mustache, Jackson?
I could draw it on.
You could be that guy.
Pencil mustache.
We also have other characters, Evil and Billy Cole, who's your Renfield kind of fella. Special effects for this film was done by Richard Edlund from Ghostbusters. That's the Ghostbusters tie-in.
And it comes full circle.
It does.
Can we talk about Slimer now?
You can if you would like.
So Ghostbusters, which was in 1984, I really think Ghostbusters is the reason why green slime continues to be like, it had its peak in the 80s, then it came back in the 90s.
Don't forget about the film, The Green Slime, with the best soundtrack ever, Darren and I's episode of Hugh.
What is that?
Oh, well, firstly, Brian, maybe you need to catch up on my episodes, because 3 weeks ago, Darren and I did a slime-filled episode.
Wow.
Where we talk about The Blob, the green slime.
Wait, did you talk about you can't do that on television, on Nickelodeon?
No, we did not.
Because that's some green slime right there.
Green slime was so hot.
It was hot.
What was that?
The hotness.
Is that the one where they just like
you
drop?
You can't do that on television.
We just set out of our
fool. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, special effects also by Steve Johnson from Videodrome, Big Trouble in Little China, right?
Ooh.
And Randy Cook from The Thing and The Gate, which is another great film with great little monsters. So Fright Night opens up with Roddy McDowall, who's being Peter Vincent, hosting this show, actually very similar to the Crypt Keepers kind of show.
Yeah.
So we're treated with that. Mm-hmm. No boobs, though, this time. Sorry, Jackson.
They didn't know.
If you notice also in this film, Peter Vincent is being the vampire hunter, and he tries to stake the Dracula character backwards. The stake is backwards.
Yes, I did catch that.
I think it's lovely. And Charlie, in the beginning, is trying to get with Amanda, or Amy. I shouldn't use a real name like I know her.
But then all the voices in his head start to talk to him.
Exactly. Yardley Smith shows up. It's crazy, right? But Charlie's kind of date rapey. In 1985, I guess that was, like, normal.
Definitely pressuring your girlfriend into, you know, taking it to, you know, past second base seems to be a reoccurring theme in these movies.
But it works. He pressures
especially
her.
Especially in 80s movies.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's like the thing to do. So he pressures her. She's like, fine, I guess. Well, firstly, she's like, don't pressure me. And then she's like, okay. And
I'm easily swayed, then even Charlie, I'm not.
Yeah, exactly. Then Charlie looks out the window and he sees the neighbors carrying a coffin into the house next door. Dun, dun, dun. That starts us kind of off with this film. Now, Amy's pissed off at Charlie because he won't have sex with her, even though she had just agreed to it, and she really wasn't that into it, but whatever. And Charlie's, like, now preoccupied with these neighbors. We start with Charlie in his car, which is very cool.
His
very
car
cool
is pretty
Mustang.
Sweet.
We hear the music cruising for a boppin'. Again, in this film, a lot of the songs, almost all of the songs that are on the soundtrack are diegetic music, so we're being fed it from the actual characters. They're listening to it along. The next song we hear is Every Night I Rock Myself to Sleep, which, just watching this film, I know every word to every song in this movie, and I don't know whether I should be so proud of it, but I am.
How do you know every word?
Because I listened to the soundtrack as a child over and over and over and over again. I know every single word, and that's playing over the speakers in the diner, which Amy again gets pissed at Charlie. This is like a thing that just kind of continues going on.
I feel like
on.
They don't have a very healthy relationship.
No, they
yeah, because
don't.
He's distracted by vampires. Mm. And she's like doing this hot, cold shenanigans, which is her prerogative. She doesn't owe him anything. But it is kind of annoying.
It's true.
And that's when we get the gross, sloppy Joe to the face, which is one of my favorite things. If you're going to put some, like, a pie, forget about it. Sloppy Joe, yes, please.
That was so gross. I don't know why, but it just grossed me the hell out. It's kind of like a pie, you know, whipped cream.
Pie's
like
good
delicious.
Fun,
it's got, like, some, like, nice little aesthetic peaks when it comes off the face. Mm-hmm. Reminds you of Double Dare when you were a kid.
Oh, yes.
Or at least when I was a kid.
Which I think had green in the
80s.
Too.
Yes.
Yes, there was.
That's
oozing.
Actually what I was thinking
come
of.
Come full circle on the green ooze.
Yeah.
Self-referential right there.
But mm-hmm. Sloppy Joe's, that's like, that's meat. Meat does not go in the face.
Also, sometimes it's really hot.
Yeah,
that's true.
It can burn.
Because a lot of times, like, I try to eat Sloppy Joe's before they're ready to eat, and it's just really, really hot, and it burned my mouth.
I was about to say we should fact check a hot Sloppy Joe, but I don't know if the images would be very good.
What do you mean?
I don't know.
Hot Sloppy Joe. That
sounds
is
like
a fact.
Sloppy Joe
a
sounds
very
gross.
Disgusting sex
oh,
position.
Like if we
of
Googled
some kind.
It? Oh,
like
yeah.
If you just Google yeah. Hot Sloppy
hot
Joe.
Sloppy
like,
Joe.
I'm going to drop a hot Sloppy Joe on your chest. It's like, nah. No. That
no.
Part of the internet.
No, please, no. Little It reference there.
So we're introduced to Billy Cole, and it made me like think about the fact that Billy Cole is essentially the Renfield to Jerry Dandridge's Dracula, and Renfields are the lowest form of life on like the planet. They have to eat bugs, they hang out with Dracula, seemingly kind of want to sleep with him, but then Dracula never sleeps with them because he's not interested, and they follow him around forever.
Hmm. Yeah, Renfields are boogers.
Yeah, the only good Renfield was Tom Waits, I think.
Oh yeah,
that was a good Renfield.
Touché.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the coolest one, but...
But maybe it's because that movie was so stylistic. Like, maybe that's the only
maybe because
reason
it was
why.
Tom Waits.
Well, yeah, it's probably
ah, that's
it's
true.
Tom Waits.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably because it's
a
Tom
perfect,
Waits.
Perfect storm right there.
Exactly.
If I was going to be a Renfield, I would be a Tom Waits Renfield. It's never going to happen, though.
You don't know. I don't think Renfield woke up one day and was like, you know what I want to do? I want to be a bug eater. You know?
I mean, there is an abundance of cockroaches in this city.
If I become a
and
vampire...
And probably vampires.
If I was a vampire, would you be my Renfield?
No! No one wants to be... You
no
would
one wants
be
to
Renfield.
Be anyone's... You probably... You're Renfield. Totally,
oh my God. It's so true.
I don't eat bugs.
Yes, you do.
That you know of. You sleep with your mouth open.
True. No. That means I eat at least 5 spiders a year.
5 spiders a year. Which is essentially an alternative fact. That has never been proven real by anyone.
Yeah. How do they come up with that?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't want to know. I do not want to know how they come out with the fact about people eating 5 spiders a year.
And what kind of spiders are these?
Any kinds. I mean, like, are they dust mites? Probably.
Mm. Oh, you definitely...
Because I don't even know if I'm eating those.
You probably eat thousands of those.
Yeah, who knows?
Oof. I don't know. Cover them in Dorito dust and it's fine. I don't care. Mm.
Then they would be orange, like, climbing around.
Well, then you know what you're eating at night. I'm eating that. It's going to crawl in my mouth later. That orange thing crawling across the floor.
Oh, excellent.
Gross.
Done and done. So this film, beyond the soundtrack, which has awesome, awesome people on it, we also have a composed score by Brad Fidel. He is the same guy who wrote the Terminator theme. He did the compositions for Serpent and the Rainbow. He also... Here's a great 80s situation. He also was a keyboardist for Hall & Oates.
Ooh.
Yeah. So this guy knows music. All right. I think we can agree.
Well,
this man knows music.
Absolutely. He definitely knows mustaches.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. So he gives us a couple times this really sexy synth and guitar kind of music. If you've noticed, that shows up. That is his score there. And we see Charlie being a peeping Tom with Chris Sarandon, and now we finally get boobs.
Yes.
First time ever. And you had a comment about ladies in the 80s.
Yeah, I feel like the prerequisite was, do you have giant knockers? Mm. It was less like...
Blonde. They liked blonde people.
Knockers
blonde people
and
were
fake
really
blondes.
Important.
Yeah. Yes.
In the 80s, it seems.
I'm a blonde, right? That song was in 2 movies.
Hmm.
I don't even know that song.
You don't know that song?
No.
What?
It sounds like you just made it up. I'm a blonde, yeah.
Yeah, it does sound like I just made it up. But it's real, damn it.
That was a Beatles song, right? I'm a blonde, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Yes, Jackson, thank you for reminding me of the Beatles song, I'm a blonde, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, glad to be of service. Because I'm blonde, I don't have to think. I talk like a baby and I never pay for drinks. Don't have to worry about getting a man. If I keep this blonde and I keep these tan. Because I'm a blonde, Because I'm a blonde, Anyway, moving on.
80s feminism, come on.
Woo! Then that's when we see that Charlie is right all along. Jerry Dandridge has fangs and long fingernails. So he is clearly a vampire, or he has bad teeth or whatever. But no, we are clearly led to believe that he is a vampire. So Charlie calls the police, and the detective who comes to investigate brings Charlie with him and goes and talks to Billy Cole the next day. What I really like about this film is it combines a lot of vampire lore that everyone kind of knows. So we really know that Jerry has to follow the rules. Garlic, holy water, invite in, crosses.
Yeah, the 80s was far more willing to just play with the rules and play with the atmosphere around the rules of, like, classic horror tropes like Draculas and vampires. Where in the 90s you had, like, Anne Rice coming into the scene and, like, rewriting vampire rules and all that kind of stuff. And now it's to a point where nobody knows what the original rules of a vampire are, aside from, like, garlic and crosses and
yeah,
stakes.
And I like that. I like the rules because then I know how to foil vampires.
Very
obviously
Lost
throw
Boy-esque.
Grains of rice, so they have to count them. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
Whatever. But the mom is the one, Charlie's mother is the one who invites Jerry Dandridge in. Moms always invite vampires
always
in.
Always the mom. Yeah.
What is with that, moms?
I don't know. She also is like a mom in the 80s who also offers her kid Valium, which was a thing a couple weeks ago I was talking about on this show. I was like, why do moms in the 80s want to give their kids Valium?
All the time.
All the time. They loved Valium in the 80s.
A candy dish of Valium at your grandmother's house is not a bad thing.
That sounds like a sweet party.
It's like stummies. Like when they're eating stummies.
Oh, God.
It's all stuck together. You get the one clump of Valium.
Exactly. Hooray, I'll be knocked out for days. So we find out Charlie's going to see Peter Vincent. Roddy McDowell just joins the group of Scoobies, essentially, here.
Zoinks!
And then Amy and Eve will go and hire Peter Vincent to go to Jerry Dandridge. It gets very convoluted, so because he wants to prove that he's not a vampire, and she pays him $500, and Roddy McDowell is so sad.
Out of her savings bond.
Yeah, which I don't even know what that is.
Well, what is a savings
bond? Or was it a savings bond? Or was it a...
No, it was a government...
It was a savings bond, okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to use my silver certificates
yeah,
for
that's
this
what,
one?
Yes,
like,
exactly.
What
yeah,
is
yeah.
that?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means. That doesn't mean anything to me. And Peter Vincent is like, blah, blah, this is all a joke. And he discovers that Jerry has no reflection, and that's when Peter Vincent now is really part of their little group here.
Beyond the savings bond, he feels a responsibility now.
Oh, I thought that was like a movie. Beyond
yes,
the Savings Bond.
Beyond the Savings Bond. What horrible movie would that be?
It's like the sequel to The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, God. Who's in it?
Leonardo DiCaprio?
They couldn't get him. He was expensive at that point.
Tom Waits. Is Tom Waits in it?
Oh, yeah. Tom Waits is definitely
Tom Waits
in it.
And just a bunch of spiders covered in Dorito dust. That's who's in it.
He's like, this is what happens after the savings bond. I've been eating spiders this whole time.
Doritos Arachnos Locos. That's what's sponsoring this thing.
And then Mel Gibson shows up. I wonder why. So we're treated to the bulk of our soundtrack in one kind of scene, and that is the really cool 80s club scene, which I love, because we don't really know where Charlie lives. We don't even know if this is a town that's got like 1,000 people, but it has an active nightlife
club.
Every freaking suburban town has a nightclub in the 80s that is active as fuck. It doesn't make any sense at all.
It was pretty crazy, and I kind of loved it. They're playing killer music. We hear Armies of the Night by Sparks, which Sparks is really, really cool, and everyone should really look them up, because they're in a super group with Franz Ferdinand that just released an album last year. It's really cool. Everyone needs to check it out.
Holy shit, I gotta check that out.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Just saying that makes me go, I gotta check that out.
We also have Ian Hunter doing Good Man in a Bad Time. Ian Hunter was the actual, he's a songwriter. He wrote Once Bitten, Twice Shy. He wrote the original Cleveland Rocks that President of the United States did for the Drew Carey Show. And he actually arranged stuff for David Bowie as well.
What?
Right? It's crazy. So there's also this bizarre like disco song that shows up, because this club has a little something for everybody. And then there's a bit of Mickey Mousing that goes on when Jerry goes crazy in the club. Oh, P.S. though, during the Give It Up, the disco song called Give It Up, Jerry and Amy share a very sexy dance.
Yes.
That's like a move, right? Like,
I mean, that's a vampire move.
You know, I feel like that's what I would be doing if I was at a major laser show or something.
Yeah, probably. I was hoping for some breakdancing to occur at some point, because vampires have superpowers. Like,
could you imagine a breakdance? Like, if like,
how could he breakdance in that coat? That's absurd.
That coat was righteous.
Oh,
though.
But then he took it off, and then he was wearing that sweatshirt.
Yes. See, he was prepared.
Yeah.
He had the sweatshirt. He probably had sneakers on, but we
many
couldn't
see.
Many
a hot sloppy joes were given.
Maybe that's that move. It's like the dance move. It's called the sloppy joe, but it's the simulated I'm going
to
blow you.
Yeah, the thing is to get to the point where you're breakdancing so that you can use the centrifugal force of doing flares to get the hot sloppy joe down to where it needs to be. So later
down
on,
your pant leg, you mean.
Exactly, okay, yes. Yeah. So later on during the night.
This took
a
really weird left turn.
No, it took a direct turn.
Now it's just
into
now,
hot,
now
joe
a hot
territory.
Sloppy joe is just pooping your pants.
I mean, it kind of sounds like it is. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a lot less sexy. Or more sexy.
Or more sexy.
Was it ever sexy?
I don't know. I mean, being is how it was undefined. We just knew it was hot and just sloppy.
Like, I was considering it.
As this scene is going on, Amy's hair, the more turned on she gets, the bigger her hair gets.
Which, really? That's what ladies do, right?
Yeah, I don't know how it's happening. It's like literally she has a different hairdresser for every scene that the camera is on her, then it turns away and someone's teased her hair and it comes back to her, then it turns away and then more hair and more hair and bigger and bigger.
It's 1985, big hair equals sexier.
I guess it was.
That's how the film played out most of their special effects. It was like, let's do 3 hours of makeup for this you know, for this 10-second shot of you as a vampire.
That's what you have in 85. It's practical.
Yeah, exactly. And then you roll back, you turn away, then, like, it's another 3 hours of makeup for this 3 seconds of shot. It's like you're transitioning. It's absolutely crazy that they put that much effort in. It just, you know, it's just camera tricks. But that was the thing to do at the time.
So I want to draw your attention to the fact that these songs in this particular scene, everything is Mickey Moused in here. So Give It Up is the song when Amy and Jerry are dancing. And You Can't Hide from the Beast is when Jerry goes crazy in the club. He's like pretending to be cool, but then he can't do it. So You Can't Hide from the Beast Inside by Autograph is that song. Yes. So everything is very, you know, phoned in, I guess. And that's when we get the quote from Jerry, "Welcome to Fright Night for real." And I thought that was fucking awesome when I was a kid. I used to say it all the time.
In what situations?
Oh, just all the time. I was a bizarre child.
It kind of feels like an O'Doyle Rules kind of thing.
Were you the
school
bully?
You might just like run over and knock somebody's like books out of their hands. Be like, "Welcome to Fright Night for real."
No, I think I would just say it when I came into the room, even.
Or maybe, like, somebody walks into the bathroom and it's, like, really awful and you're just like, "Welcome to Fright Night for real."
No.
I like it. I think I'll start saying it again.
Or you're giving somebody a hot sloppy Joe and you're like, "Welcome to Fright Night."
I'm going
to
edit that out because that was gross.
Also, still nondescript. Could have been several things.
No, I think it was pretty descriptive. I think we know what a hot sloppy Joe is. Anyway, also on the soundtrack that we have to talk about, like I said, Autograph, their big hit was Turn Up the Radio in 94, and they broke up in 89. A lot of these bands broke up right after the soundtrack came out. Jay Giles' band, same thing, had a hit with Centerfold in 81, broke up after this movie. White Sister, though, had songs in Killer Party and Halloween 5. So they, like, you know, were soundtrack kind of people, but none of these particular artists that are on this were really very popular by themselves. But to me, I thought they were cool as hell. Devo is like really the only really popular one,
right? Yeah, that threw me for a loop because I'm listening to the soundtrack, I'm looking at all the names, and like all these bands sound like other bands.
Yes,
and the only one that's not another band is Devo.
Exactly.
It's like, it's weird Sparks that it's become, on there. You know, this huge thing later on in their career.
I think they broke up and stuff.
Oh, okay.
So we're treated to the final song, which is Fright Night, which is the Jay Giles Band song. I loved that about the 80s, that the song said the title and sometimes the plot. This one, a lot of times in the 80s, there would be a rap that told us what also happened in the movie. Not on this case, but it's okay. I'll do without the rap.
Secret of the Ooze, perfect example.
This is a good example.
But that wasn't the 80s.
But it is
felt like the 80s.
It's Green Slime. We'll count it in some kind of way.
Green Slime. Woo. So that'll wrap it up for us. Just two movies today because there's a lot of listening that the listeners need to do, right?
Absolutely.
I think you need to go get that soundtrack for Fright Night for sure. Demon Knight too. Why not?
Yeah.
Demon Knight is like, that's if you want to get an education on some really good 90s metal, that's a good place to start.
As always, you can find Darren and I. He will be back next week. We're on all the social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at RanceMacab. Send us a Gmail, therancemacab@gmail.com. Drop by our Patreon site, patreon.com/RanceMacab, where we have exclusive content twice a month, different things for our patrons there. Let's see. Brian, what are you promoting right now?
I'm co-organizing the 2017 Game Devs of Color Expo this year. It's being held in Harlem at the historic Schomburg Center. We're going to be holding panels, talks, educational sessions on marginalized people in gaming. Everybody is invited, no matter what your background, where you come from. And we have a lot of great games from, you know, from Tennessee to Africa. We have tons of great games that are going to be there. It's fun. We did it last year, too, with Microsoft. This year, it's going to be in Harlem. I think about 2 months ago, there was a Black Comic-Con there at the same place. So nice. It's a really cool place. Yeah.
Awesome. And where can people find out about it?
They can go to our Eventbrite page, and they can buy tickets. I think we're selling early bird tickets right now. So get on that while you can. And
what's it called on Eventbrite?
It's called the 2017 Game Devs of Color Expo. And you can join us on June 24th, 2017, and we hope to see you there.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you both, Jackson and Brian, for joining me in Darren's absence. I was kind of happy, though. I got to do whatever I wanted to do. Woo! And then I didn't have, like, Darren being like, you didn't take good notes. This time I took the best notes.
Even I took notes.
That's very true. My notes were terrible.
You did take notes, Jackson. Very good.
I took notes and had a laptop open.
This is not a half-assed show. We have lots of notes here. I'm going to take a picture.
Everywhere.
And I'm going to post it on Twitter so everyone can see all the notes that we have.
Killed a whole entire tree.
Stuff and things.
And we drank some laundry wine.
Laundry wine.
We also drank some laundry wine. A gift from our laundromat. Anyone who gives wine is not deserving of a hot sloppy Joe.
Or,
well, wait, it depends on what you're into.
Extra deserving of a hot sloppy Joe. I'm not here to judge people. Like, whatever you're into, you know. We're still unclear on the definition, too, so.
I think we're pretty clear.
I think we have a hot sloppy, you know, judgment.
We have a hot sloppy idea.
Yeah, we have a hot sloppy idea.
This is Jackson.
And I'm Brian.
And this is Mindy. Thanks.